Chapter 10, Secession and Civil War. Kate Stone was 20 years old and a member of a wealthy planter family when the Civil War began. After Kate's father died, her mother Amanda oversaw the family's business affairs. In 1860, the Stones moved to a cotton plantation near the Mississippi River in East Carroll Parish. With more than 1,000 acres and 150 slaves, the family's future seemed secure. However, in 1861, after Louisiana's secession from the United States in January and the beginning of the Civil War in April, the lives of everyone on the Stone plantation changed. Secession is the withdrawal of a state from the Union. Kate kept a diary and wrote about many of the changes in their lives. Eventually, all five of Kate's brothers served in the war on the Confederate side. In 1861, Kate wrote that the oldest was wild to be off to Virginia because he feared the fighting would be over before he can get there. However, as the war dragged on, worry about her brothers became a constant theme in her diary. Sadly, by the end of 1863, two of her brothers had died while serving in the Confederate Army, one from pneumonia and the other from an accident. In her diary, Kate expressed her firm Confederate patriotism, insisting, "Our cause is just and must prevail." But even for a patriot, the war's hardships became difficult to take. Union forces arrived on the family's plantation in 1862. With them came a justified fear that their slaves would abandon the plantation for the freedom they believed the Union Army would provide. In an attempt to limit her losses, Amanda Stone sent 120 of her slaves to Texas in 1863. She and Kate were forced to follow the slaves to Texas later that same year. In the family's absence, the few remaining slaves took over the plantation and moved into the family's home, dividing the rooms and the Stones' remaining personal property among themselves. The Stone women would remain refugees, people who are forced to leave their home or country, until the end of the war in 1865. They were able to reclaim their plantation, but, due to emancipation, the freeing of slaves, lost all their property to the slaves. The family had to face the new reality of planting and harvesting their fields with freed people who, Kate regretted, now demanded high wages. Kate felt ambivalent about the end of slavery, but after the war, she did her best to adjust to a world that she felt had been turned upside down. She married, raised children, and devoted herself to memorializing the service of Confederate soldiers like her brothers. She founded the Madison Parish Chapter of the United Daughters of the Confederacy and remained active until her death in 1907. In this chapter, we will examine the political and cultural issues that led to sectional tensions and, ultimately, led Louisiana to secede from the Union. We will also learn about the wartime experiences of soldiers, politicians, civilians, and slaves in Union-occupied areas of Louisiana and in the parts of the state that remained in Confederate hands throughout the war. Finally, we will examine the immediate consequences of the war's end. Section 1. Sectionalism and Secession. As you read, look for compromises that attempted to keep slavery issues from dividing the country, a book that caused strong but opposite reactions in the North and the South, how the election of Abraham Lincoln in 1860 led to the secession of Southern states, conflicting feelings of Louisianians regarding secession and their eventual acceptance of the idea. Terms: states' rights, Missouri Compromise, Wilmot Proviso, Compromise of 1850, popular sovereignty, Fugitive Slave Act, sectionalism, Confederate States of America. Between 1820 and 1850, political disputes arose over the related issues of slavery, its expansion, and states' rights. The principle of states' rights emphasizes the rights of individual states over the rights of the federal government. Anti-slavery and abolitionist sentiment grew in the North during those decades. Most of that section's states had outlawed slavery decades earlier. The states that had done so became known as free states. In the South, the economic system was dependent on slavery. Thus, in slave states, ideas about freeing the slaves were seen as a threat to both the economy and the society. Southerners also believed that slavery would need to extend into newly acquired territories in order to remain strong over time. As the United States grew in the years following the Louisiana Purchase, repeated disagreements arose about whether newly acquired territories and states would come into the Union with or without slavery. Members of Congress adopted several compromises in attempt to satisfy both sides. Attempts at compromise. The Missouri Compromise of 1820 set a boundary between slave and free states along the southern border of the new state of Missouri. That line was located at latitude 36 degrees 30 minutes north. That boundary also extended westward into new territories and was intended to provide a permanent line of separation between slave and free areas. Maine was admitted at the same time in order to maintain an even number of slave and free states within the nation. Yet, each time the nation added new territory, the same questions continued to fester, worsen, grow more troublesome. After 1846, the territories acquired in the aftermath of the Mexican-American War became the focus of disagreement. A Democratic congressman from Pennsylvania named David Wilmot wrote legislation that would prohibit slavery in any new territory acquired as a result of that war. The House of Representatives passed the Wilmot Proviso repeatedly. However, the Senate, which had a pro-slavery majority, blocked it. Regardless of the outcome, each time Wilmot's bill was introduced, it enhanced tensions over the issue of slavery. Finally, both houses of Congress reached a five-part compromise. The first three parts of the Compromise of 1850 dealt specifically with new territories in the Southwest. First, California would enter the Union as a free state. Second, the people of the Utah and New Mexico territories would decide the slavery issue for themselves. This process was called popular sovereignty, the ability of the people of an area to decide an issue, such as whether to allow slavery, for themselves. Third, Texas accepted revised borders with New Mexico in exchange for a payment from the federal government. Fourth, slavery continued to exist in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., but the slave trade was abolished there. A law regarding fugitive or runaway slaves was the fifth part of the compromise. The most hotly contested parts of the legislation had been those that focused on newly acquired territories in the Southwest. But it was this fifth part that proved the most incendiary, tending to inflame or stir up people. The Fugitive Slave Act was designed to ensure Southern slaveholders that they could reclaim slaves who escaped to free states. Under the new law, masters or their representatives had only to appear before specially appointed commissioners and swear that the slave in question belonged to them. The commissioners received $10 for a case that resulted in a slave being returned, but only $5 when a claim was rejected. So the commissioners had an economic incentive to return slaves to masters who claimed them. Northerners who held anti-slavery views were incensed or furious, particularly because the law required all citizens to assist officials who were looking for runaways. Instead of settling the matter, the Fugitive Slave Act led to a rise in anti-slavery feelings in the North. This created further disagreement between the two sections of the nation. Uncle Tom's Cabin, a novel published in 1852, created great sympathy for the suffering of slaves and advanced the anti-slavery cause in the North. The author, Harriet Beecher Stowe, was born in Connecticut. Though she had lived in Ohio on the border of a slave state, she never witnessed plantation slavery for herself. Yet Stowe's fictional Uncle Tom's Cabin had a very real impact on the national debate over slavery. Stowe vividly portrayed what she saw as the evils of slavery through the experiences of memorable characters. The character of Uncle Tom, for whom the novel is named, was sold down the river from Kentucky to Louisiana. A cruel master named Simon Legree purchased Tom and abused him relentlessly, resulting in his death. In the South, and particularly in Louisiana, where much of her novel was set, Stowe's portrayal of slavery received harsh criticism. No matter how one felt, the novel had an impact on public opinion, increasing the ever-growing separation between the free and slave states. Political parties and sectionalism. political parties retained their importance throughout the 1850s, but the ongoing arguments over slavery's existence and extension began to override loyalty to a political party. During the decades leading to the Civil War, Southerners and Northerners began to think of themselves and their section of the country as fundamentally different from the other. This way of dividing the country based on slave or free was called sectionalism. The election of 1860. By the time of the presidential election of 1860, the previous party system, dominated by the Democrats and Whigs, had come apart. Northern and Southern Democrats split over the issue of slavery and offered two separate candidates for president that year. Meanwhile, some Southerners who wished to stay in the Union formed the Constitutional Union Party and put forth a third candidate. Abraham Lincoln of Illinois was the fourth candidate in the presidential race of 1860. He represented the six-year-old Republican Party. Republicans believed that slavery was a negative social force and that it dishonored the dignity of free laborers. The party's motto, "Free Soil, Free Labor, Free Men," made clear that the party was opposed to the extension of slavery into new territories. However, Republicans promised to leave the slavery as it was in the current slave states. This was not enough for many Southerners, who felt slavery had to expand into the new territories as the nation grew. Most Southerners were so anti-Republican that Abraham Lincoln did not even appear on the ballot in 10 of the 15 slave states, including Louisiana. Thus, when Lincoln was elected president in November 1860, most Southerners felt his election was unfair. Some believed the election of a Republican president was the final straw. They felt that it gave them the right to secede from the United States and form a new union of slaveholding states. In December, South Carolina was the first state to take this action. Louisiana secedes. Although he had originally opposed withdrawing from the Union, Louisiana Governor Thomas Overton Moore began to move the state towards secession soon after Lincoln's election by taking over federal facilities along the Mississippi River. Despite Moore's actions, it was unclear whether a majority of voters wanted to secede. Because the state's economy depended on trade that linked markets in New Orleans with northern and international markets, many business people were undecided about secession. Sugar planters were also concerned about how the loss of the protective federal tariff would affect prices and markets for their crop. Despite these economic concerns, many others believed that the state ought to secede. On Thanksgiving Day, 1860, Presbyterian minister Benjamin Palmer gave a sermon in New Orleans called "The South, Her Peril and Her Duty." Palmer made the argument that Southerners had a God-ordained duty to protect their slaves and to defend slavery. His sermon, which was printed and distributed throughout the region, became widely influential among those who were considering secession. Beyond religious convictions, others believed that the South's strong and honorable men could defeat the North quickly in a war and make a new nation where slavery would be secure. This belief in honorable Southern manhood failed to take into account that the industrializing North had a larger population of potential soldiers. It also had a stronger manufacturing base that could make weapons and other necessary supplies quickly. In December 1860, the Louisiana legislature called an election for delegates to consider the question. The balance of elected delegates who were for and against secession was close. However, by the time those delegates gathered to debate the issue in Baton Rouge, the tide had shifted toward withdrawal from the Union. Louisiana seceded from the United States on January 26, 1861. In early April, the state joined six other slave states in the newly formed Confederate States of America, or CSA.